Welcome back in. Hour number two. It's the Abe TL Show here till 10 o'clock. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Talk on 92.9 The Game presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. I'm going to get Paramount Plus, but probably in 2026 because of UFC. I had ESPN Plus for the UFC. They're bailing and going to Paramount. Now I'm going to have to get Paramount. And the good news is I think I get the ESPN Unlimited, their new thing. I'm getting it for free through my TV provider. And so I'm very excited about that. And I can cancel one and just slide that money to the other. Anyways, ESPN Plus, for those of you who don't know, feels like a must in college football season. I watch so many games, not just at home, but if I go out walking the dog, you know, for those of you who haven't listened to me before, I have a husky named Chipper, who she's now 12 years old, and she's gotten way more impatient as she's gotten older. And she'll just start howling at me. Just, we're going out, and I'm like, there's 5:15 left in the second quarter. You can't wait till halftime? The answer is no. And so I do stream a lot on my phone while walking Chipper. And so I can't miss moments, you know that. So ESPN Plus has been big, and YouTube TV, for those of you who missed the announcement early on, they reached a short-term deal to continue carrying Fox, which is not a huge surprise because the probably biggest question mark game of the weekend is on Fox. And that, of course, is noon, Fox, number one Texas, an underdog going into Ohio State. This one, look, either one of these teams, whoever loses this game, has the potential to rebound and still win the national championship. I think if we learned one thing from last year, it's that the most talented team can lose a game here or there for a variety of reasons and still win the title. I thought Ohio State was the best team in the country last year. They lost the game to Oregon. They got some payback here and there, but they weren't perfect. And ultimately, talent won out. So will Texas be that team this year? Yeah, I think people are asking so many of the wrong questions about the Texas Longhorns. I really do. And we're going to welcome in John Bryce of footballscoop.com in about 15 minutes to talk about this game, some of the other big games, and a couple other storylines in college football. The question for me is not what are we going to get from Arch Manning. It's what are we going to get around Arch Manning. This is a Texas team that sent a bunch of guys into the NFL, specifically offensive line, defensive line, receiver. I have some questions about Texas, especially on offense. Are they going to be able to sustain a run game this year? They didn't really last year. Over the course of the season, sometimes because of injury, sometimes because of inability to move. Who's going to catch the ball for Arch Manning? And will they be able to protect him? I think Anthony Hill on defense is going to lead the way. There's still some questions, though. Young secondary. Defensive line's got to replace a couple of good pass rushers. I have a lot more questions about Texas around Arch Manning than I do about Arch Manning. I think Arch is going to be good. I'm not here to say that he's next level, very clearly to be the number one overall draft pick whichever year he comes out. Now, he may be that. I'm not saying he's not that. I don't think the question I have about Texas is about Arch. I have about what's going on around Arch. And then for Ohio State, I certainly would not feel confident in the quarterback situation. And all I would say is this. When in doubt, when pressured, when in trouble, just throw it in the direction I know this is crazy game plan coaching, a little backdoor meeting brought out on air. Throw it to Jeremiah Smith. Let me help you out. Julian Sayin. When Texas and Anthony Hill out of that linebacker spot comes at you and he's in your face, just throw it to Jeremiah Smith. Get some air under it. Throw it up high. But that guy is as good a security blanket as there has been, I would say, since Brock Bowers was at Georgia. When in doubt, hoss it up to that dude. I'm fascinated. I think Jeremiah Smith is the best player offensively in the country. Don't know if he's winning a Heisman. I think it's very difficult to do, although we saw a receiver do it not too long ago. I think there's a potential that Caleb Downs is the best defensive player in the country. What else do they have? And I think the quarterback there for Ohio State is the real question as well. While I think that you're comfortable with what you're going to get out of Arch Manning, I don't know if that's the same for Ohio State. They got to show something to me on offense against this Texas D. 3:30 on ABC, number 8, Alabama at Florida State. Are we expecting a rebound year for Florida State? I'll be honest, and I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this. And Oren, you sat in with Mike Bell. It's my understanding that he's not extremely high. I believe I've seen some comments on social media as well that there are many others who are higher on Florida State and a bounce back year than he is. I talked with him, I wouldn't say at length, but we shared some comments and some thoughts while at Falcons training camp. And I know he's a big Florida State guy. And I said, hey, are you feeling this is a bounce back year? And Thomas Castellanos, he's talking a lot of trash. And obviously he can do some great things, but he's also can do some dumb things. And felt like Bell was a little hesitant to feel like very good going into this season. And obviously it's a tough one against Alabama. And then for Bama, Ty Simpson, is he the guy? Is he better fit for this offense? Does Kalen DeBoer settle some nerves about people without Nick Saban? And just like I mentioned, throw it to Jeremiah Smith. Ryan Williams, it's probably a good idea. And then the other big game, the Battle of the Tigers, if you want to call it that. The Battle of Death Valley, go ahead and call it that. I think it's the battle of the top two Heisman contenders. I think I can call it that. But LSU and Clemson, Saturday night, 7:30 at Clemson. I think, and obviously it depends on how this game looks. I think the winning quarterback in this game, be it LSU's Garrett Nussmeier, be it Clemson's Cade Klubnik, unless this is some weird, ugly 17-13 game, which I don't think we expect, I think the winner takes the lead in the Heisman race. Now, there's potential for Arch Manning to go into Ohio State and just light it up, and he'd be the guy. And we're only talking about a one-week frontrunner here. I think Cade Klubnik wins the Heisman, so let me just go ahead and get that out of the way. I think Clemson wins this game. But I think Garrett Nussmeier's in that discussion, and they're very confident that he could be one of the top quarterbacks taken in the NFL draft. So interested to see. A couple of other games on Saturday over the course of the day. Noon on ABC, Syracuse at Tennessee. That one's right here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. 3:30, you guys know. Marshall at number 5, Georgia, ESPN. 7:45 on SEC Network, Georgia State at Ole Miss. Austin Simmons, saw a glimpse of him last year. Is he the real deal? And then an interesting one late, and it's fascinating to see this. A couple late games this year. One was on, I think, Big Ten Network. This one is on Fox. 11 o'clock kickoff. How about that? 11 o'clock. Utah at UCLA. Is it a bounce-back year for Kyle Whittingham at Utah? And can Deshaun Foster find some solid ground there at UCLA? Interesting to see. Obviously, you have the quarterback situation there at UCLA with Nico. Fascinated to see that. And what is Utah doing without Cam Rising? He's been there for 8 years, essentially leading that program. And there's a lot of people who believe that they are better off without him. Let's see. Sunday, 3:30, Virginia Tech at South Carolina. That one right here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Notre Dame at Miami, Sunday nightcap, 7:30, ABC. Some genius planned a fantasy draft for me at that exact same time. Not happy about it. Might miss a pick or two because I'm going to be locked in. And I think Miami's one of those teams that people are overlooking. I think Carson Beck is getting an unfair amount of hate for what happened the last couple of seasons with Georgia. Some of it was his fault. I don't think all of it was. And I think he's ready to light things up there at Miami. I don't know if we're going Heisman first pick overall like we were with him a year ago. I think he's going to be very good. I think Miami's going to be very good. I'm interested in what Notre Dame is because they got a lot to respond to after the run they went on last year. Marcus Freeman's the hot rising young coach. Is he going to stay that way? They're ranked top six right now. We'll see. And then Monday night, Bill Belichick's debut, TCU at North Carolina. We'll talk some more about these games with my guests coming up. John Bryce of footballscoop.com. Also, later in the hour, my Falcons expectations have changed. I think I have a decent allowance and reason why. Have yours changed? We'll talk about it. Also, at 8 o'clock, I got a fantasy football story you need to hear. Plus, who's the next first-time champion in college football? I got NFL predictions coming your way later as well. But right now, John Bryce of Football Scoop. Stick around 5 minutes. He's going to join us on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Welcome back into the Kia Studios. Abe Gordon, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the Abe TL Show. Talked a lot of college football over the last 40 minutes. We're going to talk a little bit more. I am so excited for week one. I can't tell you. It feels like the biggest week one of all time. There's so many good games that matter. There's so many games that I think can be overlooked that are important to me. I already mentioned it. I am so ready for Boise State and South Florida tomorrow. I think people have gotten it wrong about Boise State a year ago. I think that they are, once again, the group of five team to catch. And I think South Florida's offense might have something to say about that at home. We go to the WadeFord.com hotline to talk about week one and everything that's going on in college football. It is John Bryce, footballscoop.com, national football columnist. He also covers Notre Dame specifically, and that's good because I have some questions about the Irish and maybe a question that he leans as the Irish is one of the answers as well. But, John, we have made it. I know there were some games in week zero. Some really good games, by the way, in week zero. Some good finishes out on the West Coast and the whatever coast Dublin is on as well. But week one, John, am I crazy for feeling like this is the biggest week one in recent memory?
Boy, it's an incredible opening weekend because of all the premier intersectional non-conference games. And when you have three different matchups of top 10 teams for opening weekend, and the thing I like is like all three are in home stadiums. They're not neutral siders. And then on top of that, you've got Alabama going to Florida State in what is a really pivotal year for Mike Norvell. And then compelling, like you said, I'm fired up for Thursday night because I've known Alex Golish for a while and saw what he did at Tennessee. And frankly, I think Tennessee has very much missed Alex Golish since he left as its offensive coordinator and took over at South Florida. So I think especially if South Florida can get a win with having Miami and Florida both coming up after that, this is South Florida's best chance to get a win that could be the difference in a playoff berth at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think the winner of that game, Boise State at South Florida, 5:30 on Thursday, I think the winner of that game is the team to catch in the group of five? And I guess we can just kind of start there. Who else is in that discussion for group of five? In recent years, we've kind of had Memphis and Tulane in there. We Army and Navy keep making their opinions heard. Who is your group of five team outside of Boise State just to keep an eye on?
Yeah, you just named two of them right there. Memphis won 10 games a year ago. They get Arkansas at home in the opening month of the season, which could be a chance to obviously score a big-time win against a stable, solid, not a great, but a solid SEC program. Tulane has Northwestern early. They've got a couple of other, I think, power conference games that could very much give them a chance to make a statement. So James Madison is another one that I would consider. I would want to keep an eye on James Madison. I like Chesney. He's won everywhere he's been. And I think James Madison does a great job and has some of the premier resources and support of anybody in the G5. And when we talk about that, you reference Boise. I think they probably have the most money of any G5 team. Tulane is right there. I think Tulane's around $9 to $10 million that they're able to rev share, and James Madison in that mix. So Memphis, certainly with the commitment from FedEx or the Smith family, has deep pockets as well. So I think those are good teams with really good coaches, good players, good programs, but also they're still viable and relevant because they have adapted and adjusted and invested in this new era.
Now, you say Tulane has money, but it wasn't enough to keep Darian Mensa there. He went to Duke reportedly for $4 million because I think if he were still there, we're having a different discussion about who's ranked in the top 25. You mentioned a couple of big games. Obviously, Texas, Ohio State. You got LSU at Clemson. Maybe one of those teams is the answer to this question. Maybe it's the Georgia Bulldogs. Maybe it's someone else. Who do you believe is the most talented team in college football?
Boy, that's I probably at first blush think it's Texas. Ohio State is right there. I know the 247 Sports team composites came out this week, and I think it might have been Georgia that was number one. I don't have it right in front of me. But I like the top-end talent of the quarterback position at Ohio State and Texas better than I like Georgia's quarterback talent. And so that's why, to me, I would put those teams right there. Notre Dame, I think, is closer than it ever has been in this century of college football. And Clemson is really good at some really key spots. So those probably be my top three, four. Penn State, obviously, in there. And Dan Lanning has made Oregon the West Coast's true SEC team.
Yeah, I need to see a lot of things from Oregon before I'm ready to talk about them. I think the injuries at receiver, the question marks there for Dante Moore, I'm not saying they're not that good. I just want to see it. Kind of the same way I want to see it with Texas, if we're going to be honest. I was talking last segment. My questions are not about Arch Manning. I have real concerns about their receiving core. And I know it's recruit and rebuild and all that, but they sent a lot of talent to the NFL. So I'm fascinated to see how that works out for them. The other thing for me is Penn State. And that's another one where it's just like, are they going to win the big one this year? Can James Franklin get out of his own way? Everyone's trying to tell me Penn State's the squad to beat in the Big Ten. And again, John, I'm not saying they're not, but they're one of those schools, and there are a couple of schools like them where every year I just need to see it to really buy in.
Oh, that's completely fair. And look, now they return the most experienced talent of anybody in college football, in my opinion, and love their offensive line and their two-headed monsters at running back. And Drew Aller, to me, is a lot like Cade Klubnik. Like, physically, you see a lot there. Is he really going to be able to elevate his game to the next level? But Penn State does not have to leave home until the first weekend of October. They should be undefeated and have a great amount of confidence with them at that time. If they're ever going to get Ohio State, you would think it would be this year as Ohio State retools, because nobody, in my opinion, lost more incredible talent than the Buckeyes off that title team. But that game is at the Shoe and not in Happy Valley. And so, again, you have to see it to believe it.
No doubt about it. It's John Bryce, footballscoop.com, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline, trying to run down some of these schedule and games a couple of times a season with him. Always appreciate the conversation. What's the bigger game for the end playoff discussion? Is it Texas, Ohio State, or is it LSU, Clemson?
I think it's LSU, Clemson, because LSU has such a brutal schedule remaining, and it's a make or break year in a lot of ways for Brian Kelly. He's got to be a playoff contender the fourth week of November. And one quick thing, I actually wrote about this yesterday on Football Scoop, so a shameless plug there. LSU is opening away from home for the fifth consecutive year. The only other teams to do that inside the top 25 are Boise State and Notre Dame. LSU is the only team that hasn't won opening season game this decade. LSU has not won a season opener since 2019, the year it won the national title. And so I think there's extra pressure on the Tigers for all of those reasons, but especially because they don't know what it's like to get their season started on the right foot under Brian Kelly. And with all the tough games they have beyond that, they really, really need it. Clemson is still going. If Clemson loses this game, it probably means Clemson doesn't end up with a top four bye in the CFP, but it's still going to be one of the two best teams all season long in the ACC.
I'm not going to run down the entire list of Heisman favorites and the odds. I think we know who some of them are, obviously. Klubnik and Manning and you know, Garrett Nussmeier, and there's a bunch of different guys that did. Jeremiah Smith, certainly. Is there a dark horse that you think should be on that list? And again, I'm not giving you the whole list, but I think you know who the favorites are. Is there a guy you think right now people are not paying attention to that within the first month of the season they will?
You know, Dante Moore at Oregon is one of the most hyped quarterbacks of this decade, and Oregon plays a lot of primetime games. They're in the Big Ten. They're a very trendy team. They get a lot of attention. They've got all the Nike stuff going for them. If he comes out and looks like this transcendent player that he was on the recruiting trail that made him be a Notre Dame commit and then headed to UCLA and then Oregon and all these other places, everybody wanted him. He's a guy I could see being in it. There are a couple of more out there. I would say that DJ Lagway, if Florida is just unbelievable, and Florida, again, has a brutal schedule, but if DJ Lagway has Florida in playoff contention and maybe has like this singular performance in a showdown against Texas, he would surge into the Heisman conversation at that point in time, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we've talked about this, John. I am a Florida fan, and they have an outstanding receiving core. The questions about health already ringing for Lagway. The schedule, as you mentioned, you can't go 8-4 and win a Heisman anymore. And I think that's going to be fighting against him as much as anything. It's John Bryce, footballscoop.com. This one is probably as open-ended a question as I'm going to ask you tonight, John. Who's the quarterback that won a battle that you have the most or highest expectations for?
Oh, my. That is quite the question. I mean, I think C.J. Carr at Notre Dame is going to be really, really good. We actually just left some interviews with players, including C.J. Carr. And the word I used on a video we just shot was command presence. And the guy just exudes it, and you can see why he has people who want to follow him. And I've talked to some people who told me that last summer, when CJ Carr had no prayer in the world of playing for Notre Dame and was just this freshman who'd been on campus for 8 months, he and his mom went to Costco and spent like $500 to cook out for the entire team, anybody that wanted to show up, and tons of people showed up. And I'm sure free food always helps. It gets me there. But they also came because he was already building respect with his teammates. So C.J. Carr would be in that mix. Julian Sain is definitely in that mix. And then Ty Simpson, I've known that family for a really long time. Jason Simpson, the UT Martin head coach, is a really brilliant offensive mind and one of the longest tenured FCS coaches out there. So I'm probably most excited to see Ty Simpson get his chance because he's such a rarity at this point in time. What is this, year four? Is he a redshirt junior and he's finally getting his chance to start for Alabama?
Yeah, and just circling back to CJ Carr, I remember, well, I don't even know how many months ago it was, John, that you put me onto him, and the thought initially was that Steve Angeli, who had played and we'd seen a little bit of, was just going to stay at Notre Dame and be the starter, and you're like, I don't know. He might be out, and Carr might be in. It's a fascinating battle, but certainly, look, that's a top-10 team right now with a huge game, so he needs to show up immediately because I think Carson Beck is due for a bigger year than a lot of people are expecting based off of what happened to him at Georgia the past two seasons. Final question for you, John Bryce of FootballScoop.com. Certainly have to ask you about the Georgia Bulldogs. Look, they're ranked number five right now, but they're not necessarily being discussed as one of the teams that can win it all by a variety of different people. Is this a team that you think has what it takes to win it all? Are they trying to replace too much with too many question marks? Not enough first-round NFL talent, as people say? Where do you stand on the Georgia Bulldogs?
Well, they're in the SEC with arguably the single best head coach in college football right now. And so because of all that, I think Georgia has to be considered a CFP title contender. I do think it's fair to have significant question marks about Georgia. And I think Gunnar Stockton is a really natural leader and has a way that makes guys gravitate to him and want to play hard for him. But quarterback has never been more important in college football. And we've seen Georgia win a title with a quote-unquote game manager, but it's because his entire – defense basically now plays in the NFL, and Georgia still has a boatload of talent and they still have a bunch of NFL dudes, but I don't know that they have as many NFL dudes, and they've got a really tough schedule with the likes of Texas and Alabama and a week three or a game three trip to Tennessee that's not beaten Georgia since 2016. So I expect Georgia to be in playoff contention all year long. I would not handicap Georgia as my favorite right now to win the title.
John, always appreciate your time. Always appreciate the conversation. We'll let the season get a couple weeks deep, and then we'll do it again, all right?
Let's do it again for sure, Abe. Appreciate you, boys. Have a great night.
You got it. And John will be out there, I'm sure, covering that Notre Dame-Miami game. I think that is I get that everyone's on Texas-Ohio State, and you should be. I get you're on LSU-Clemson, and you should be. Do not sleep on Notre Dame and Miami. I would almost lock it in, assuming health plays itself out. I would almost lock it in. The winner of that game is got a playoff spot. I would be shocked if the winner of that game doesn't play their way in the rest of the year. So a lot going on again. That one's Sunday right here on Sports Radio 92.9, the game. All right, when we come back, I hate to admit it, my expectations for the Falcons have decreased. They have diminished. It's true. I hope I'm wrong. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Also, the Atlanta Dream underway. We're going to keep an eye on that one as well. It's Abe Gordon. The Abe TL show rolls on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I want to open up the phone lines here for just a moment. 404-726-0929. And welcome in. Abe TL show tonight here on a Wednesday. Abe Gordon filling in for Chris Thomas. And this is not a conversation I like to have because I know I'm going to get yelled at for being, I don't know, scared, a non-believer. Call me a coward, whatever connotation you want is fine. I get it. But I'm just going to be truthful with the audience about where I'm at and hope that I'm wrong, which is normally how I'm comfortable. It's okay if I'm wrong because that means things are going better than I expect. But I will say this. My expectations for the Falcons have changed. Now, I am the type of fan who has two modes as it comes to my sports teams. Mode number one, I start out hot, super high on a team, and then as the season approaches, I start to lose some of that confidence. I start to cool off. Or I might start out cold, down on a team, and as the season approaches, I start to talk myself into some things. Unfortunately for the Falcons and for me, I started out on this team hot, super confident, and I've lost some of that. I have. Not that much of it. Not all of it. But some of it. And yeah, I certainly still think they can accomplish some of the goals that pretty much we all have likely set for them. You know, somewhere in the range of 10 to 12 wins. The NFC South. But I'm less confident about it. And Vegas certainly is less confident. They haven't changed their stance on this being an 8 or 9 win team. Look, a lot of it does have to do with Caleb McGarry and the injury at right tackle. I don't think I'd be having this discussion 2 weeks ago. I think 2 weeks ago I was still at 10 wins, 11 wins, winning the NFC South, getting a playoff game, let's ride. Now, I'm a little bit further down. But it's not just Caleb McGarry. Darnell Mooney, I don't know what's going on there. That's part of it. But I need this team to get going immediately. Week one is a massive game. Do you guys know if we're going to have Darnell Mooney week one? I don't. I'm not saying we won't, but I don't know. We're playing a team that I think can score in Tampa. We're going to need to score. And again, not saying we can't or won't without Mooney, but I'd like to have him, and I'd like to have him healthy. And so, look, I also think that not seeing much out of Jalen Walker yet is kind of a little molehill in my mind. It's a mental molehill. I think his setbacks are part of it. I wanted to see him and Pierce both come out firing. One of them have. We haven't seen a lot from Walker. And I think so much relies on the pass rush this year. And so, look, I'm going to admit it. Part of my levels of trust, my confidence, it has wavered. Has yours? That's the question. And we got a couple minutes to take some calls. 404-726-0929. Look, I don't think this is a 5-win team now, right? I'm not that low on them. But I thought for sure this team's winning 11 games in the NFC South. Maybe 10 at worst. And I'm starting to really doubt that. And a lot of it has to do with the injury, but also the uncertainty there for Darnell Mooney is bothersome to me as well. 404-726-0929. We have Yo, who I know is going to call in and say 15-2. I already know, Yo, that you've got him 15-2, but let's go ahead and hear it. Let's hear it, brother.
What's happening, young man? How you doing, dude?
I'm doing good, brother. Good to chat with you.
Man, listen, I got to revise my statements because there is a problem. Like, we all knew it was going to be a problem like a year or so ago. We watched it become a problem in the New Orleans Saints game when Kirk Cousins got smashed, when unfortunately our right tackle tripped and fell, while our quarterback who we
now,
paid
now, hold, hold on,
million
yo, hold, hold on, hold on. I'm going to let you finish. He was tripped. He did not trip. Someone stepped on him, right? So we're just clearing that up. All right, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I will agree with you 100%. He tripped. But now, ever since then, we've been tripping. Because when he got tripped, we were 6-3, right? That's for all the people on the internet who understand Twitter. We were a really good team. We had everything that it needed to be to make it happen. But it happened. And there was the overwhelming concern was our right tackle is not a great pass blocker. And then we're like, all right, well, we got our second guy, Storm Noten. And Storm is a great guy. And he's hurt as well. And now we've signed like 5 right tackles to our practice squad because we all understand that it is important for the offensive line to actually be there. So I am concerned. I love Michael Penix Jr. I love Kirk Cousins. I think that we're going to still be in that range where we can win the South. My concern is obvious to everyone who has watched football in their life. You cannot have a dynamic offense and a subject offensive line. If you don't believe me, look at the Bengals when they got to the Super Bowl. There's a reason that Joe Burrow doesn't have a Super Bowl. It's because his offensive line can't protect him. We all know that this is a problem. Love you, Abe.
All right, well, real quick, yo, before you leave, because you have been on record previously at 15-2. So,
yes, sir.
So where are you now? Are you 13-4? Where's your mindset?
Honestly, I like Mike, and I watch Mike deal with a subject offensive line in Washington. I watched him go like 11-0 up until he had to meet Michigan, and he lost it because the offensive line couldn't protect him. So I'm going to be like somewhere around 11-7 or 11-6 because we got 17 games, right?
Yeah.
I'm somewhere around there. I really do believe in Michael Penix, and I believe in everything he can do. I don't even care about who the wide receivers are because Mike is amazing, right? And so we have to take that into consideration. But the problem becomes the same thing that freaking Mahomes had to deal with, where if your offensive line can't protect you, you cannot win the games. The same thing Brady had to deal with when he played the Giants. If your offensive line can't protect you, you can't win the game. So I'm still there. But there is a problem with the idea that people want to sit here and criticize me. And, like, people I love, like, hey, listen, Squid Billy, you know you my guy. But you knew that I was telling the truth. And then you sit there and act like I was wrong. I wasn't wrong, bro.
Well, I certainly never felt that 15-2 was going to happen, so I wasn't quite with you on that. But I think where you're at now is certainly reasonable. I appreciate the call, yo. And look, not for nothing, like, my confidence has wavered. I've said that. We just heard yo, who had been on record as 15-2, drop it all the way to 11-6 for him. Now, 11-6, I still think, gets you what you need to be. That's probably where my expectations were anyways, somewhere between 10 and 12 wins, and they're lower than that now. They're lower than that now are yours. 404-726-0929. We got Wendy out there hanging out with us on the ABTL show here on a Wednesday night. Wendy, how you doing tonight?
I am doing awesome. When I hear your voice, it's a good night, sir.
Well, I appreciate that. So tell me what you're thinking about the Falcons. What were your expectations, and have they changed at all now that the season is approaching?
I think we are a solid 8-9 team based on the fact that our quote-unquote awesome quarterback has won one game and one game only in the NFL. I think that our coach is highly suspect, and I believe that when people are paying full price for preseason games, that our winning should matter just a little bit. And in my mind, we are 0-3 to start the season. I don't see any reason to be enthusiastic about the opener because he hasn't shown us anything other than losing. Our quote-unquote best players, some of them are already injured, and we are getting late round our draft picks and our other teams cast off to replace them. But we're told, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Just keep paying that money. It's showing up.
I appreciate the call, Wendy, and the passion. And look, obviously the preseason payments for tickets, that's a whole other discussion. But the concern for the season is there. And Vegas has been here at 8-9 wins this entire time. I'm unfortunately aligned at this point. And that's tough to say because that means that this season is not anywhere close to what it needs to be. It could potentially cost Raheem Morris his job. It could potentially cost Terry Fontenot his job. And the team, and I agree with what Yo had to say. At 6-3 last year, we were having conversations about could they finish as the NFC's number two seed? Can they compete in the NFC title game? Even last year, we saw it with Michael Penix on the road against the Commanders, who went to the NFC title game. And I just find it tough mentally to get there. One last call here real quick. We got Garlito on line one. Garlito, what are we thinking about the Falcons? Have your expectations changed after Caleb McGarry's injury and the uncertainty around Darnell Mooney?
Well, Darnell Mooney hurt me. I've never been a Caleb McGarry fan, if I said his name correct, because he's lights out when it comes to run blocking, pass blocking. He's subpar. I personally think that they should move Jake Matthews over to the right side since he played right tackle at Texas A&M and let Elijah Wilkerson, you know, be on the left side. I trust Matthews to protect, you know, Michael Penix more so than I will Elijah Wilkerson on that strong side, being that he's a left-handed quarterback. Now, with the whole Jalen Walker and James Pierce, yeah, James Pierce came out like a lightning rod, lights out. They double, triple teaming him the first preseason game, but Jalen Walker got hurt. He had a hamstring and groin injury, so we really didn't get to see a lot of him to really say. He made a few plays, got a couple of tackles, but we didn't really get to see so much of him. So I'm not going to kill the Falcons this year. You know, realistically, just like the caller before last, I see, 11-6.
Yeah, that's right.
17 games. Yeah, 11-6. You know, realistically, as long as we can protect, I'm more concerned about the offensive line than I am Mooney, because you got Nash, you got, what's the guy named, Sellers, whatever, I can't pronounce his name. You got Casey Washington. You got people that's willing, I believe, that'll step up because they want to make the roster. You know what I mean? At wide receiver. Then you still got Cardale Hodge and Ray McCloud. So I don't feel like it's going to be that big of a drop off, especially if Kyle Pitts.
And that's the big key, is if Kyle Pitts is what Kyle Pitts can be. And I appreciate the call, Garlito. I apologize. We're running out of time this segment. If he can be what he's going to be, it can help cover up the absence of Darnell Mooney until he gets back. And I will say this, Ray McCloud has looked outstanding filling in as your number two receiver, potentially a big-time breakout season. This is a guy that I thought has been better than his career has shown, so maybe some potential there as well. All right, we will talk more about the Atlanta Falcons later. In the next hour, I got my predictions across the NFL. I'll tell you where I have the Falcons finishing as well. But coming up next, I teased it earlier. We have to pay that off, of course. A story of a first-time fantasy football player that may have assembled the worst team in history. I'll give you the details next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.